Okay, I've got a really odd request, but if someone's by the back door there, can you shut the one that's closest to me? There's a really nice shiny car out there, and the sun's like right in my, I can't see a thing. It's crazy. Yeah, just that door there, Randall. Thank you very much. Thanks. Well, welcome today. If you follow us on any type of social media, I've gotten lots of questions about what on earth this sermon is about. John Wick versus Jesus. Now, if you don't know what John Wick is, John Wick is a movie series. The third one's in theaters for parents with kids, you know, grade 2 to 6 or junior high or high school. Look, I'm not condoning the movie this morning. Don't run out and go, okay, on Netflix this afternoon, family movie date. We're all going to watch John Wick. It's going to be great. It's rated R. It's very violent. But reason I bring it up is because culturally, it's well known. Culturally, it became very popular right after the first movie a few years ago. In fact, in Fortnite, there's a skin. You can get the John Wick skin for your character. So it's become a bit of a pop culture phenomenon. And let me just fill you in if you're not familiar with the character of John Wick. So, and I don't know anything about the other two movies, but the first one, some crooks break in his home, and they steal some stuff, gets beat up, and they kill his puppy. So that's a pretty bad start to a movie. But what these criminals don't realize is that this puppy was given to him by his wife, who's just passed away. It's kind of his last piece of her. And what they really don't know is that he is a retired, trained assassin. And so you could guess the rest of the movie, he gets revenge. In the way he gets revenge, it's super violent. And maybe you're not into something violent. Maybe a movie more up your speed would be something like Mean Girls, okay? So Mean Girls, the main character, comes into a school. There's some girls who bully her, and the way she gets revenge on them is she infiltrates their group and is mean and nasty to them. Why do stories about revenge seem to strike such a chord with us? Why did they become so popular so fast? Well, I think that we can all resonate with that. We've all had times where we've been wronged unfairly. Like we didn't do anything and something bad happens to us. And if we're brutally honest, we have some fantasies, right? About what we do to that person, if we could, or we really want them to, you know, pay the price, or at least feel how we feel. We want someone to notice, someone, anywhere, somewhere, that something bad has happened to us. And so when we see movies like this and read stories like this, something kind of clicks inside. In our sinful nature, in our flesh, in those desires, something clicks and we're like, yeah. We see lived out on a screen or in a book or in a story people doing some of the things we wish would happen to the people who've wronged us. And so it begs a question, you know, what should we do when something happens that's wrong? What should we do if something bad happens to us? Now, a couple weeks ago, I was outside doing some work, and my neighbor Chris from a few houses down was walking, and we got talking, and something happened to him. And you may have seen this on the news, CTV News, or in the Record, or on the radio, about a family who was at Kiwanis Park over the long weekend in July. And after a few hours of enjoying the pool, they were asked to get out. Their 5-year-old daughter has a rare genetic disorder, and she can't handle the cold temperatures, so they have a flotation device. It's not, you know, CSA approved or anything, but what it does is it keeps her mainly out of the water so she can enjoy it. And after about 4 hours, they said, that's oversized, you need to get it out of the pool. And they measured it, and it was not oversized. It was the right size to be in there, but they asked everyone in the pool then to get rid of their flotation devices, and they were asked to leave the property, and all sorts of stuff happened. And as I talked to him, he wasn't sure what to do, and he was upset, and they left without incident, but they contacted the media to let them know what's happened. He was at that, you know, time maybe possibly still considering some legal action. The mayor of Kitchener has gone to their home and met with them. Here's a quote from the paper. They've threatened legal action, and the reason they went to the media is because now that they have a platform to show others that this happens all the time, and it's got to stop. What would you do? How would you handle that? Because we face injustice all the time, don't we? At home, work, at school, from a coworker, a family member, a neighbor, something unjust happens to us, and how do we respond? Is it important that we respond the right way? What would you do? Well, if we go back in time 2,000 years and ask the disciples of Jesus how they would respond, it would be a very, very simple answer for them. Because in addition, being Jews, to the Ten Commandments, they had the Law of Moses. Now, the Law of Moses contained all sorts of different kinds of laws. That's why sometimes when we look back, we misunderstand what the context was, what it was for. Some of them were meant just for that time period. We have a new covenant. We're not under that covenant anymore. It can get a little confusing. But some of the laws they had were just for personal stuff, how you deal with others. Morally, religiously, how do we deal with others? But some of it was civil, like it's about crime. This was, as a nation, how they would do things. So they included in the Law of Moses how to handle crime, injustice, property loss, injury, personal problems. It's all the stuff you see on like a Judge Judy, but the priests had to deal with all of those things in Israel. And so for the disciples, it'd be a very, very simple answer. Because in the Law of Moses, just one chapter after the Ten Commandments, in Exodus 21 and 22, we have a list of laws, commands, or rules that deal with property loss, physical injury, stuff between neighbors, when someone's offended, calling one another names, personal injury, offense, all these things. Let me give you just a few snapshots of that. Exodus 21, verse 12 says, "Anyone who assaults and kills another person must be put to death. 23, the punishment must match the injury, a life for a life, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a hand for a hand, a foot for a foot, a burn for a burn, a wound for a wound, a bruise for a bruise. Over in chapter 22, a thief who is caught must pay in full for everything he stole. If he cannot pay, he must be sold as a slave to pay for his theft. If someone steals an ox or a donkey or a sheep and is found in the thief's possession, then the thief must pay double the value of the stolen animal." It seems pretty fair. Like the scales of justice even out. They've got a way that if I have something stolen from me, I don't have to do it on my own. That's why these laws were called the laws of retaliation. They were meant to limit me, someone in Israel, from taking matters into my own hands, because I might be unfair. And so I could take it to the priest, take it to the temple, take it to the court, and this was the law. This was the law. This was the legal code. So it's an eye for an eye. I lose. You put out my eye because you've done something. I can put out your eye. I get a burn. I can give you a burn. You steal my donkey. Well, I don't want that donkey back. I don't know what you did to it. So you pay me double so I can get another donkey and be paid back for my trouble. So they tried to even the scales of justice. But when Jesus enters the scene, as we saw last week with anger, when he speaks about revenge, he says, "You missed the whole point." The law was to limit retaliation, but it was meant to impact your hearts, not just to make the scales equal. What you're leaning into and what you're following is just the starting point. You miss the point altogether. And if you have your Bibles with you, you can turn to Matthew 5. That's where we'll spend most of our time this morning. Matthew 5, if you don't have a Bible, there's some at the back. You can look us up on the Bible app or follow along on the screen. So Jesus, in talking about revenge, knowing that the answer to what would you do to these disciples that he's teaching as he shares his Sermon on the Mount, this group of teaching over a few days predominantly to his 12 disciples on the hillside of Galilee, he says this, "You have heard the law that says the punishment must match the injury." He's quoting here from Exodus, "An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth." They would have known that. So he's saying, you know this. you know exactly how you should behave, you know what to do. He's validating, you know, right behavior. But I say, so being fully God, he's saying, you missed the point. Here's what I say. Here's where this was meant to lead you all along and where I will lead you from this point on. But I say, do not resist an evil person. If someone slaps you on the right cheek, offer the other cheek also. As we go through this passage this morning, you'll learn that some of our cultural cliches that we say over and over again actually originate with Jesus. Unfortunately, we probably don't live them out very well. So Jesus is saying, look, it's not enough eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. Don't resist the evil person. Turn the other cheek. Now, for us listening to this, this doesn't sound all that groundbreaking, right? Do you know why? Because our Canadian culture and most of the developed world is built on Judeo-Christian values. This, what Jesus is teaching, which was revolutionary and difficult to hear, let alone follow, for those disciples and anyone following Jesus, to us seems like old hat. We've heard this stuff. Our kindergarten lessons are based off this. You know, share with others, be nice, don't poke another person, don't get back at them, two wrongs, don't make a right. All of these things are based on what Jesus taught in that day, in that time. Revolutionary. In fact, when you look back to the law of Moses, we can look back and go, man, that seems archaic. What's up with God? But when you look at it in context, it is thousands of years ahead of any culture around them. And what Jesus is saying here is thousands of years of the culture of Greece and Rome around them at the time. And so Jesus says, turn the other cheek. Now, we listen and we think, yeah, of course, I know that. How many people play hockey? Or how many watch hockey? How many watch? Hockey fans, all right? Hockey fans. Let me ask you this. You're on the ice, or your favorite player's on the ice. On the shift, gets taken out in the corner, loses a tooth, goes to the dressing room, comes back. What are you supposed to do next shift? Right? Oh, you're nervously laughing because you know what I'm asking, right? You can't let that other team away. You can't let that. You got to teach that player a lesson, because if you let him away with that, I mean, he's just going to walk all over your team. So your team and you got their number, right? Tooth for tooth, right? At least knock their tooth out. Or worse, right? Because, right, you're laughing, but it's true. Come on, you're like, I don't know about that. Whatever. I go to Rangers games. I listen to the fans. Our culture celebrates that. We love a good fight. We love retaliation. We love revenge. We love it. But is it really the best way? And so Jesus says, I have a better way for you. There's a better way than personal revenge. Before I get, I'll go to the next verse in a minute. What about justice? The reason why I think it's so hard to turn the other cheek is because we have an ingrained sense of justice. In fact, when we are interviewing someone as an elder, that's one of the key questions towards the end we ask them and their spouse if they're married. How's your sense of justice? Like, if there's a wrong committed, are you right there? You want them to pay back? Because if we have a deep-seated, off-kilter sense of justice, when I'm wronged, I'm going to want to pay back. Now, some of us wouldn't go into the corner with another person and knock their tooth out, right? We're a little above that. Some of us are beyond that. But you might passively, aggressively put a little post on Facebook, right? You know what it means. Most people know what it means. Everybody knows what it means. But you're not fully saying it. You've been wronged. You want others to know you've been wronged. You lost out on something. You didn't get something. Something didn't go your way. Somebody said something. So I was through the Starbucks and this, you know, barista didn't do the thing and I hate this, did it a bad review, ugh, whatever it's going to be, right? We do this stuff and we think nothing of it because that's what social media is all about. Or you just say things to a family member or a coworker because you're wronged. Now, today I'm not going to deal with how we actually address things when we are wronged and we're angry. Last week, if you're looking for that, we dealt with that in great detail last week when we're angry. But Jesus is talking about retaliation. And the thing we have to understand is that our sense of justice and what is fair changes all the time. It changes all the time. What I think is fair, you don't think is fair. And the most unfair thing of all is God's sense of justice. Do you know why? Because Jesus came into our sin. Sin always leads to death. Death of relationships. Death of our hope. Death personally. Death physically. Death spiritually. It always leads to death. Jesus came into our mess. He took on himself the result of our sin, our revenge, our not turning the other cheek, and took it all on himself in order that we might be freed from that and given new life. He received death. He received the revenge and the utmost worst stuff we could pour out because we've been wronged. And even though he had no sin, took it all. God's justice is not fair, but it is right. Consider Romans 5. Romans 5:8 says this, "But God showed his great love for us by sending Christ to die for us while we were still sinners." Before anyone knew anything they did was wrong, before anyone would ever confess, "I've done anything wrong in my life," because most people, we kind of like to know we're right. "I didn't do anything wrong. It was the other person. Did you see what he, she did to me? They're wrong. I'm right." That's the way we feel. Before anyone confessed any wrongdoing, Jesus came. Knowing that many people would never confess any wrongdoing, any sin, and he loved us anyway. That's crazy. And Jesus is teaching this to his disciples, who we can go, "Oh yeah, he died on the cross and all these things." At the time when they heard this, it was still 3 to 3.5 years before he would show them the full extent of God's love, God's justice, God's unfair gospel, where we receive life and he receives death. And so Jesus gives us some examples of how this plays out. Matthew 5, verse 40. "If you are sued in court and your shirt is taken from you, give your coat too. If a soldier demands that you carry his gear for a mile, carry it 2 miles. Give to those who ask and don't turn away from those who want to borrow." What is Jesus trying to do? Why is Jesus saying you shouldn't take revenge? Now, elsewhere in the New Testament, we learn that, you know, revenge is God's to take. Revenge is so horrible for at least a couple reasons. First of all, because when we take revenge, we take the place of God. In a lack of faith, we assume that God can't handle the situation. God doesn't see it our way. No one's going to cry out for us because this wrong's been done. I'm going to make sure somebody pays or somebody knows. We take the place of God. And we don't let God see the results. God said, "Look, I'll take vengeance. I'll repay. I'll make sure what's right happens. I'll make sure." So when we take revenge, we take God's place. But secondly, revenge never satisfies. Revenge escalates. That's all revenge can ever do. Revenge can only defeat and escalate. And Jesus is telling us, stop the escalation of violence, of cruelty, of hate by escalating grace. And when we escalate grace, we de-escalate revenge. And so he gives these three examples. He says, look, if you're in court, he doesn't say whether you're wrong or not. Whether you're wrong or not, it doesn't matter. If you're in court and someone sues you for your shirt, go further, escalate grace to de-escalate revenge. If you're walking along a road and a Roman soldier tells you to carry his gear for a mile. Now, the Israelites, they were under Roman occupation. They were conquered. And any Roman officer could tell any Jew, "You will carry my gear for a mile," and they could say nothing about it. So rather than putting up protest, saying, "We're waiting for that Messiah to come who's going to overthrow Rome, and one day you won't be able to do this," graciously and joyfully carry it 2 miles. Because who knows what your demeanor walking 2 miles with a Roman soldier who's used to an angry outcry, who actually interacts with someone who's joyful and does it willingly and takes time to listen. What might that do for someone who is distant from God, who might be having a rough day and just needs a little compassion? and lend to those who want to borrow from you. Now, one caveat under this, Jesus isn't saying, look, that neighbor who's in gambling debt and just wants to keep taking your money to spend it on that, he's not saying just give there. He's also not saying, the person who keeps taking your stuff and abusing and using you and selling it on eBay and then saying, I don't know where it went. He's not saying keep do that. What he is saying is that those who aren't deserving, those with whom we should have a beef, the neighbor next door, their hedges are growing over ours and the fence isn't right and they're loud and all this stuff. When they come looking for something to borrow, you be the one who escalates grace. You do what others would not do. You do what others would not do. Escalate grace. There's something beautiful about that. There's something beautiful about grace. Here's what Jesus is saying in essence. Revenge defeats. Grace overcomes. Revenge defeats. Grace overcomes. The only thing revenge can do is defeat. Here's the question you need to ask yourself. Two questions. What is enough? If someone personally wounds you, calls you a name, wrecks your reputation, how do you pay that back? Is it enough that they're impeached or go before the courts or something? When is enough enough? Someone steals something from you, you get it back, but still not made right in my heart. You were supposed to be given a promotion or something was supposed to happen. Didn't happen. You get something else. It's okay. Maybe you're making the same amount of money, but this person. Revenge can never mend. Revenge can't help that. Do you know in John Wick at the very end of the movie, he gets another little puppy and things like that, but he's got all this carnage around him and he's still sad. He's still mourning, and he's still empty, and he's still lost. After all that, and apart from all the dead people around him, he's still kind of dead inside. At least in Mean Girls, there's a bit of a, she realizes, I shouldn't be mean to others, and everyone has a happy, friendly ending, and they're all friends and all this Hollywood thing. Revenge defeats. It defeats us. It defeats the other person. It defeats our hope. It's never enough. It will continue to escalate inside us. Think about this. Slapping a cheek, all right? When have you ever seen someone slapped? Hopefully you never have, but when have you ever seen someone slapped and they're slapped back and they're like, whew, we're even. We good? We cool? Let's go our separate ways. No, you slap someone, they slap you back. It escalates into greater violence. When you're calling each other names, it escalates. Facebook fights escalate. Social media problems escalate. It always escalates. All revenge can do is escalate and defeat. That's it. It can't solve anything. Even the law of retaliation in the Old Testament can only do so much. It was meant to restrain so that we refrain from giving revenge. But it was meant to get us in a place where our hearts can be right with others. Grace overcomes. Grace can actually get into our hearts where we're wounded, where we're hurt, where we have sadness, where the trouble, where the offense really sits. And Jesus can do his work. Not so that we're better people. Because trying to do this on your own won't work. We just don't have it in us to act the way Jesus is asking us to act. This isn't just good teaching. God is working in us so that in us, as he works in us, he can work through us to other people because our relationship with God and our relationship with others are connected. I think the most beautiful image in any play or movie I've ever seen about not seeking revenge amongst personal revenge is in Les Mis. Maybe you're familiar with the musical. It's got at least a couple movie renditions. The one with Liam Neeson from 1998 is better than this one. What's Hugh Jackman? They're both really good. But there's a scene. Actually, I think the first time I saw the scene, Gavin showed it to a bunch of youth pastors. And ever since then, it's one of my favorite scenes in all movies. So you can watch it on YouTube if you want. Look up the Liam Neeson Les Mis with the bishop. And what happens is Jean Valjean is released from prison. And he wants to start a new life. He's got nothing. And there's a bishop who takes him in for the night, feeds him, gives him a bed, is trying to set him on his right way. And in the middle of the night, Jean Valjean goes back to his old ways. He steals the silver and he assaults the bishop. And the next day, the bishop is there trying to clean up and the nuns and take stock of everything. The police get a hold of Jean Valjean and realize the silver is stolen from the bishop. And the police come back with Jean Valjean. And they say, look who we caught. Look, here's the silver. And the bishop has an opportunity to seek revenge. Not only weigh the scales, but because he has power, he can abuse his power. Kind of like that Roman soldier making someone walk a mile. But instead he says, yeah, you can believe what he says. They said, really? Jean Valjean said, you gave this to him. And the bishop offers grace in an incredible way. And he says, yes, but I don't understand why you didn't take the candlesticks as well. The candlesticks are worth 10 times as much. And he tells a shocked nun to go and get the candlesticks and to get the silver candlesticks and put it in his bag. And he's unlocked and the police go away. And when it's just the two of them, whether it's the musical or the spoken version, the bishop looks at Jean Valjean and he says, today in this act, I've purchased your soul. I've set your soul free. In this moment, through silver, I've set you free from hatred and grief. Revenge can only escalate, multiply, and eat away at you. All it can do is defeat. But grace like that, undeserved grace, the grace that we experienced through Jesus when he came and sacrificed himself so that we know God is good, and that we can walk with him all the time, that's unbelievable. And when he works in us and we extend that to others, it sets people free. Sets people free. People don't know what to do with forgiveness, with grace. When you don't meet them as hard as they come at you, when you don't give them what they deserve because we haven't gotten what we deserve, that can heal relationships. That can mend your heart. That can change everything. Revenge defeats. Grace overcomes. So I want to end with something that is going to make some of you uncomfortable. And I'm okay with that. Maybe you're not. Part of coming to church isn't just walking in, walking out, having a good time. You know, we heard about VBC. It's actually applying. And part of applying means we've got to bounce some things off one another. So what I want you to do as we close for the last like 5-10 minutes, I want you to get in groups of like 4 to 8, no more. And there's going to be, you can pop the questions up here. You don't have to participate, but here's the thing. What you share this morning, just in figuring this out together, may be the thing that helps the person in the group apply this more than a message, more than the songs, more than anything else. It just might be the practical piece that helps you more than anything else. So here's what I want you to do. Share your names if you don't know your names. And maybe someone or a couple of you can share a time when you've been unfairly wrong. What did you want to do? What did you hope would happen? What did you do? And if you were to do it again, how do you think Jesus would want you to respond? Maybe it's the same. Maybe it's different. This takes a great deal of vulnerability with maybe some people you don't know that well. But that's part of church. We're to get to know one another that well. And then maybe get to the last question if the first ones are a little uncomfortable for you. Hopefully they're not. How do you think Jesus would want you to respond if you were the one who were kicked out of a pool because your daughter with a rare genetic disorder needed this thing and it seemed very unjust? How do you think Jesus would want you to respond? So let me pray for you, and then we'll divide up in some groups, and we'll just kind of let it be. Try and be a little quiet. If your group's done, you need to go get kids, do that. But just leave some space to talk over the next 5-10 minutes or so. Heavenly Father, thanks so much that you sent Jesus, not to give us revolutionary teaching as a religious leader, but to come and build a relationship by conquering death. And in that, you can conquer all these sinful desires to seek revenge. That never leads anywhere. May we be people of grace. And may, as we discuss things this morning, be able to have maybe a renewed perspective on a situation we've been in or are in currently, but especially help for the days ahead when inevitably we're going to face another situation where everything in us wants to cry foul and seek our own revenge, knowing that there's a better way. Help us to know how to walk that better way out. Help us to go the extra mile, to turn the other cheek, to be Jesus to those who don't know you. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. All right, so circle up. And after service, we got to set the chairs back up. We're not tearing them down. So circle up, then set them back, and we'll see you next week.